Welcome to the latest Serotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Serotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. And now, here's your host, Michael Loff. Welcome to Serotalk Tech Chat number 71 for September 30, 2010. This is Michael Loff. And tonight's topic is this month in access technology. And we've brought on board a variety of knowledgeable folks, techie guys, to talk about the latest news stories and innovations. Our guests tonight, JJ Meadow, blindbargains.com. Also here is Rick Harmon with blindgeekzone.net. So Rick, if you say hello so folks can get acclimated to your voice.
Good evening.
Mike Calvo.
Am I supposed to be a technology expert? Is that what they say?
With an opinion or two?
Or three.
The opinions expressed are those of the individuals and do not represent those of Serotech Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers. So please understand when you listen to this, the opinions you hear are those of Michael Loff or Mike Calvo or good friend Joe Steinkamp, and have no relationship directly to Serotech Corporation. So we hope you can keep those things separated. Coming up on October 7th is Tech Chat 72. We're going to talk about blind parenting. A lot of issues and concerns, and those of us who have been there and done that. But there are a lot of things to keep in mind, whether it be discrimination or advocacy to make sure that your children get equal education in the school system. And we're going to have tips and resources, and Ricky Inger will be joining us for that. She's very passionate about it.
Are you that old, man, that you've been there, done that already? You're finished?
Well, my son is 22, and so now it's time for tough love. You know, it's when they're adults, and you got to sit back and let them make mistakes. It's a different form of parenting when your kids get in their 20s. You're going to see, bro.
Yeah, well, I got a 21-year-old. I'm just kidding. It never ends, does it?
No, it really doesn't. Also, coming up on October 14th, we're going to talk about video magnifiers, part two of that, more of the desktop larger units. Joe will be overseeing that one, and I know Optilec has agreed to come on board, and hopefully some other folks as well. Also, we want to do a tech chat, believe it or not, folks, on blind photography. Some of us would like to know how to take pictures, family and friends, and special events. And I think even more useful is going to be our ability to use that technology to better use our iPhones to maybe get OCR or color identification, and cameras now being used for OCR, even for computers. Also joining us, James Gashel with KNFB Reading Technologies, and he's going to bring us up to date on what's going on with Blio. Hello, James. Thanks for joining us this evening.
Thank you very much, Michael, for having me on the podcast this week. I really appreciate it, representing KNFB Reading Technology. Blio is launched, at least in its very early version, it's launched. The Toshiba Bookplace launched on Tuesday, and Blio.com launched a download of Blio on Tuesday. This is not an accessible download, which is the point of this discussion. And you have to stand in line behind me in saying that it should be. There's just no question about that. We are working in that, and I'm going to explain what we're doing in October, and we expect that around October 5, we will have an accessible download of Blio. I mean, it's somewhat, you can't read, but you can move around in the app in its current form, but you will be able to read and use other functions of Blio beginning in October, and then much, much better accessibility after that. I think we need to view all of Blio, not just accessibility, as a rollout. There are lots of other things that download that's out there now doesn't do that we have said to the world that it will do. But if you tried it today, it wouldn't do what we have said it will do. And we knew that on day one, it wouldn't do everything promised for everyone. Partly what we're dealing with here is a vision. We're inventing a technology. I don't want to say we're flying the airplane while we're building it quite, but somewhat.
Okay, so will there always be separate versions? Will the mainstream always use a separate version? No.
There won't be a separate version. What will be available next week will be an update to the main version of Blio. We don't envision putting out a accessible version and an inaccessible version. Back in our development stages, we have had a separate accessibility branch for development purposes. And we achieved, well, certainly better accessibility than we have right now during that process. Now that we've merged, we also face other challenges with Blio, or for that matter with any software program, and that has more to do with stability than anything else. When we launched Blio earlier this week, obviously one of the things we want to know is, in the thousands of machines that it's installed on, will they crash? We got it pretty stable in our own environment and in our outside beta testers, but when you then post a product on the internet and say, y'all come and download it, how will it perform? We will begin to have Blio accessible with JAWS initially. Certainly, I hope System Access and NVDA and WindowEyes going forward. And so we say, well, why just one going forward? We eat an elephant one bite at a time. We're working toward accessibility. We use a Windows Presentation Foundation that at least JAWS is able to work with at this point. And I'm not 100% sure about System Access or
NVDA. It does kind of work as of now, SA and NVDA.
Yeah.
I've been able to read.
Yeah.
The only thing is the list of books just says KNFB, and I can't delineate which book, but I can start it, begin playing. Now, if I move by pages, it stops, and I have to hit play again, and I can't really use the TTS and scroll it like a book.
We certainly will be able to do that. If you're reacting to the beta version that we had available, you might find that the launched version of Blio behaves differently.
No, this is the launch. I got this Tuesday.
Oh, this is,
I was not
okay,
in the beta program at all. So.
Okay, good. That is good information. And with regards then to System Access, we need to put our accessibility engineers together to make that happen early. Because with WindowEyes, we can't even get that far. And obviously, we want it to work with every screen reader and be on multiple platforms as well.
So it is looking pretty soon. You say October 5th. That's just next Tuesday, and I won't hold you to it if it's an extra day or two. So it is pretty soon. It's not way off in the distance.
No, it's not way off in the distance. We've spent tens of thousands of dollars on accessibility. I wish it was that way on the first day. I would like to have had the memory that we achieved that, but I don't judge what we're doing on the basis of one day.
The only thing I mentioned earlier, it might have been good PR just to say in advance.
Oh,
that,
I know.
Hey, this is not going to be ready. It might have saved you a lot of negative in the Twitter sphere.
Actually, I didn't know if it would be until maybe the last week. So we decided instead to put a note on the download page about the accessibility. Maybe we should have done a better outreach than even that. I don't know.
I'll give you a whole tech chat if you're interested. Once we have something officially released, that we come back and really go through it and make people understand how it works.
Oh, absolutely. We'd be happy to.
Let's do that then. And James, I thank you for taking a few minutes and clarifying kind of where things are. We look forward to it.
Hey, Michael, thanks a lot.
Thank you, sir. The Kindle 3. Mike, you've played with it. Of course, Amazon's coming out with a web-based version saying that, you know, most of their money's made on the books and not necessarily the hardware. So maybe there will be a time we may not even need a standalone device. It's kind of nice to have the portability, but at some point maybe people will be able to read the books online. But I know there's been a lot of criticism about it. You've made some statements that have definitely bothered a few folks. I don't know if you want to kind of give any update or maybe clarification on what you were trying to say, and maybe if it was misunderstood or where you think we are and why we need to support these products, or at least look at them, or at least understand how they work and advocate for accessibility in the future if we get to a day when digital books are the only option.
I'm so misunderstood, man. I really got razzed really bad about suggesting that blind folks should buy this technology. I'm certainly not advocating that every blind person should go out there and buy this technology when it's not fully baked. I look at these types of things kind of from a management perspective. It's easier from a corporate perspective. Money is better spent on maintaining a customer as opposed to gaining new ones. It costs a lot less money to maintain a customer. Therefore, most companies really reflect on how is this going to reflect on my current customer base, which is why I really advocate if you have the ability financially to buy something so that you, in essence, own stock in it, go out and do that. But that being said, not everybody has $139, $189 bucks burning a hole in their back pocket so that they can finally get a word in edgewise into Amazon or any other product or service provider for that matter. If you can do that, great. If not, by all means, go to the store. Look at it at Target. Look at it at Best Buy. Go to your friend who's got one. Look at theirs. Sit down and write a constructive email to Amazon. Says, hey, listen, I saw it. I kind of liked it. Or even if you read Ricky's very well-written review, the thing I like about Ricky's review and what the Serotalk team did in that is not only did we speak the problems, but we also suggested some solutions, and we're by no means the experts on solutions. That's why I think it's great for us as a community to have an open dialogue. So I don't want anybody to think that I'm saying, oh yeah, just go out and buy it, you know, because otherwise they're not going to listen. It helps on all levels. There are early adopters of all kinds of platforms. A great example is this 3D television that the mainstream is getting ready to really dive into. There's a lot of early adopters right now that, you know, you can't see much on 3D TV, but the early adopters have bought it because they want to have the latest and greatest toy. They want to be able to have a word on how it works, and companies really benefit from that. So there is a benefit to that, and there are people that are sick like that. We like to play with early stuff that's kind of half-baked and see where we can influence the product and service providers to take it. So it's not just for blindness. I know that a lot of folks think that I'm saying, well, blind people need to do it especially, but no, I think any early technology, and it's happening across the board. As you look at these new set-top boxes and stuff, they're not perfect, but people are buying them in the mainstream and otherwise, and testing them and giving word back to the producers of these products. So I continue to advocate, if you want a word in, hey, the thing is usable. I wouldn't use it as my exclusive book reading device right now by any means, and I don't think it's ready for college or universities or that kind of thing, but I think that they're working that way. As far as I'm concerned, it was a great 1.0. Now, did they make some mistakes in not having blind beta testers and maybe not having blind folks in the development cycle? I think so. It seems to me, looking from the outside in, that the Kindle accessibility was what a sighted person thinks a blind person would want. And now it's time for us as blind people to say, well, that was pretty good, but close, but no cigar. This is what we really need.
Yeah, I agree with Mike. I think it's a good 1.0. And I think with a couple of firmware updates, this could easily be made quite usable.
Have any of you played with any of the new web browsers, either IE9 beta or Firefox, which I think is up to 4.0 beta 6, or Google Chrome?
I've played with Google Chrome and I've played with IE9 with mixed experiences on both platforms. I have only played with them with system access. Now, IE9, it seems it's not necessarily a screen reader problem. On one of my machines, a 64-bit Windows edition, it just crashes. So I had to go back to 8. On my notebook, though, which is also 64-bit Windows 7 box, it works fine. And SA works great. And you can use SA to go and all that stuff. They've still got some things to iron out there, but by and large, I haven't really noticed anything huge with IE9 from a blind person's perspective. Google, on the other hand, I'm using what they call the canary builds on Google Chrome, which are the daily builds. And you can sign up through your Google account to use those, and Google will update itself every day. It is bleeding edge. This has not been released yet, and they're working with things like dynamic HTML to make it better. But I will tell you, man, it's amazing that browser's speed never ceases to freak me out at how fast it loads web pages, even when you have a screen reader in the middle of it, parsing the page and looking for the beginning of content and all that stuff. It really is going to be a great experience.
Chrome is the one that's a little more intriguing to me, well, only if, again, Google can actually get off their horse and show a real commitment. Now, we have a first start now that we can at least see browse mode and do a little bit. It's going to take a lot more. Seems like we have the same half-hearted approach to Chrome as we do to some of the Android accessibility. Now, Android is starting to improve, so maybe Chrome will be right behind that. Firefox, it seems, since about 3.5, it's started to become a little more bloated, and I'm actually running 3.5, which I know is about to be deprecated. And this has nothing to do with access. I think they need to clean up their act a bit and try to make their code a little more stable instead of trying to add a lot of bells and whistles. And hopefully they can return to what made that browser good in the first place.
I have played with Google Chrome, working both with System Access and NVDA. A little rough, but it works. The only thing I haven't been able to figure out is the media bar. Once I start playing an MP3, how to navigate forward and back, it just pauses for a split second, but I haven't figured out how to move that. But it is manageable. It loads very fast. I see why a lot of folks like Chrome. It's very speedy. I haven't played with IE9. I do have a link up here for IE8, which is the last version for Windows XP. So if you're using Windows XP, you either live with 8. I'm not convinced that IE7 wasn't actually definitely more responsive and more stable, or you decide to go over to Firefox. I put the latest version of Firefox that is accessible. That's 3.6.10. The new one, the Beta 6, the only thing I've seen to do anything with it, believe it or not, is NVDA, and that's something we'll talk about. It's kind of amazing me for a beta and their official release on the 20th, some of the things that they're able to access, including basic use of the Blio and Google Chrome and Firefox 4 Beta 6, the only one I've seen that can touch that right now. Of course, this stuff changes by the minute. The latest stuff from Apple, there's the iPod Touch 8GB unit that can be purchased for $223. So if you don't have one and don't feel that you need all the memory, you can save a little money, or you can go 64 gig for like $383, I believe is the price on that. But you're advising folks to stay away from the Touch because it's just not doing what you need.
Well, I'm not saying to stay away from it. If you don't have one and you want one and you can find a deal on an iPod Touch 3, get one, just because there's nothing compelling there. That being said, I've been looking around for the last couple days ever since I said that on the podcast, and really the spread in price differential isn't huge, you know, $40 or $50 for the 64 gig iPod Touch 3 3G or the 4G one. I was very disappointed that it was not an iPhone 4 without the telephone part. That's what I expected. That's not what was released, and I actually think that Sir Jobs actually set out to make it look like they were very similar and very carefully avoided the subtle but very important differences, the big one being the camera, the backward-facing camera on the iPod Touch being a 1.1 or 1.2 megapixel camera, and the front-facing camera being the same.
If you're definitely an early adopter, I would disagree with other Mike a little bit. There is some definite improvements to the new iPod Touches and especially in the iPhone. Plus some of the camera apps that you can use, there's an app called Omobi where you can take a picture of an object, and it doesn't even have to be a barcoded object. You could take a picture of a box, and if it can recognize the picture, kind of like Google Goggles, it'll come back and at least tell you a general description of what it is, and more likely tell you the price and things like that. Matt, actually, he took a picture of the TV screen a couple days ago, and it came back, football game.
What about the screen readers? We have NVDA, which I'm pretty impressed with, even as a beta, and JAWS 12, which I don't use. What are your thoughts on that as a beta?
Yeah, NVDA, as a lot of people have said, I think they're really finally starting to get the recognition they deserve. They've come a long way. Of course, they had some funding from Mozilla and some other foundations over the last year or two. They've just gained a ton of momentum. There's more voices you can get for it now. It supports most of the popular applications. And the fact that you can run it totally portably off a thumb drive, I know System Access does that as well. NVDA being free. The biggest drawback is still with some of the business applications. It works reasonably well, and it will read you things there, but certainly not as well as the other screen readers. But if you're just browsing the web, especially in Firefox or IE9, NVDA is definitely way ahead of the curve, and it's really cool for them to just to see that. I definitely keep that as my backup screen reader. Certainly would recommend it to many people who, you know, don't need a hugely expensive screen reader. JAWS 12, I must say, for the first time in a while, it does at least look like an upgrade worth thinking about. Not that you have a choice, because you have to buy every single one in order. With the Grade 2 support, with some of the enhanced support for the newer application frameworks, the new round of office applications, things like that. At least this time, you're not just paying for a bunch of research tools that you can get off the web for free, which was the case with 11, of course.
That's intriguing to me. They're modifying the ribbon. That's great if it's usable, but you know, then you're not learning it the way that
exactly.
Windows user.
I've always been against, and they aren't the only ones that have done this. WindowEye had that different interface with the Outlook calendar. I mean, I've seen other screen readers. I mean, I'm playing with an Android phone, and they have a completely different accessible shell instead of trying to make the regular one accessible. I've always been against approaches where we can't make the original approach work, where we think it's too hard for the user, so let's just put up something that's easier. You know, and then when they go to any other computer, they try to explain to someone else how to do something, they won't know how to do it because they're going to be trying to hit file and whatever instead of using the ribbon that everyone else is learning to use. It was just in Word. Now it's coming to WordPad and other applications. So the type of thing that I think you're really better off letting people learn how to use it. And of course, it's just an option. And some people will appreciate it, especially as an advanced user. It's not something I'd want to pay for. You're basically paying to reduce functionality back to how it was 5 years ago.
Let's talk about audio recorders. That's something you're also passionate about. One you may not have played with, of course, this new Zoom H1, which they've eliminated the menus and it uses all buttons. $99, MP3 and Wave capable. runs on one AA battery, 2 gig micro SD card there to play around with. And there's a $20 accessory pack you can get that gives you a power supply and a little mount for it, a little stand and a windscreen and so forth. But I want to talk to you about the Olympus because there's a DM4, and I know you're using the 520.
The 520.
So have you played with the DM4 or do you just...
I've seen it. I mean, I held one at CSUN. At that point, they weren't really letting people turn them on much. The really big disappointment with the DM4, a couple of things. For one, when there was talk of adding NLS support, that never seemed to materialize. What it basically comes down to is you're paying twice the price of the DM520 for DAISY playback but unencrypted, so that doesn't get you very much, perhaps Bookshare if it works, and text files, and a more complete audible menu system. Is that really worth $150? Some people have praised Olympus for being kind of like Apple and including accessibility in their products. I don't think this is the same thing. You're charging $150 more. They aren't selling the DM4 in mainstream markets. They're selling it only to the blindness dealers. They don't want the price to get cut. So, you won't really find the DM4 on Amazon and places like that. For those features, paying $140, $150 more, I don't think that's including accessibility. That's including accessibility and raising the price.
I had the opportunity to speak with Camille Caffarelli, Executive Director for Horizons for the Blind, a premier Braille transcription service offering utility bills and telephone bills in Braille for customers who request it, along with their social media director, Byron Lee. We discussed the motivation behind creating directionsforme.org.
We're one of the leading transcribers, both in Braille and large of billing statements in the country, but it's a rather invisible task because nobody knows who you do and what you do. But all my life, I've always had the rather ominous issue of getting a package and asking somebody to read it and then thanking them for reading the package information, and if I just wanted to peruse it, I couldn't. So I began to think what a cool idea it would be if you could just go on a website, i.e. Directions for Me, look for what you want to buy or what you have at home, and know how to prepare it, know the warnings, and know the ingredients. And so, after a lot of work from really, really good people here, we've developed the site Directions for Me, and it's for anybody who just wants to get that information, either with food or drugs or beauty care. It's really very exciting.
We currently have over 300,000 products in our website, and we're growing every day. There's probably between 300 to 600 new products or updates added to the site each day. When you go to our website, you can either browse Directions for Me like a grocery store, so you can go to the food, health and beauty, or other, the ominous other section, which has everything from electronics to toys to games to sporting goods to just about anything. So you could browse those like shopping aisles, like you would at a store. Or you can search for a specific type of product or even a brand name. I got some medicine from Walmart a couple of weeks ago. I needed to know how many pills to take, so I just typed in the store brand sinus medicine, and it came right up. It was the first result, and I knew that I was supposed to take it, every 4 hours. And of course, when you're searching for products, one of the tricks that I use to get more results is, if I don't know how to spell something, I will just type in part of the word. For example, Marie Callender's. I didn't know how to spell calendars, so I just typed in Marie Cal, and it gave me all the results for Marie Callender's.
One of the kind of neat things about this, I think, as we move ahead, and I think there's going to be more and more Wi-Fi areas, is that you can easily use this with a Braille note or some phone, and you can just be in the store, get the directions you need. If, let's say, you're making something, you want to know what ingredients you need, you should be able to, as we move ahead in our society, just be able to look it up and know what you need and be pretty independent about it, which is what life should really be all about. And there's more and more people nowadays who are very interested in the ingredients of a product. If people maybe are diabetic or glucose intolerant, we don't really know that, when we pick up an item from the shelf. And this way you can look up all the information and you're in the same shape everyone else. I mean, you can either choose to use it or not, but at least you have the information. I just want to make one final note on Directions for Me. Understand that it just started. We just went live last week. So we do have some wrinkles that we have to fix. As we move ahead, I'm sure it's going to happen. So it's not perfect yet. We're really proud of it, but keep looking at it because you'll see improvements all the time. Call us at 800-318-2000, or they can mail us at mail@horizons-blind.org, and we'd be glad to work with them in any way we can.
Are they reinventing the wheel, or are there already sites that provide this information with ingredients and cooking instructions and instructions on taking your medicine, or has Horizons really tapped into something here with directionsforme.org?
I don't know if I'd call it reinventing the wheel, but they've taken the parts of the wheel and put it basically in one place, or at least it's a lot easier to get to than it was. You've been able to get directions all over the place on Amazon, on netgrocer.com, some of the actual manufacturer sites, but they're claiming 300,000 products, I believe, looking at through some of the categories, and they have near complete information on basically all of them. So the people I would really be worried about here, I mean, the service, you know, like the ID mate had directions on some items, and you know, this trumps that for sure. Of course, it's, you know, not as portable, but to have this type of database, especially if they can come up at some point with a mobile version of the website or expand it or, you know, link it with barcode scanners, things like that, there really is a lot of potential for this. Cool to see a nonprofit like Horizons get behind a project like this that will really benefit quite a few people.
eBay launches new help section for blind and low vision. So I guess my question is, what have we not been able to do in the past at eBay?
I think we comes in relative terms here. eBay has been one of those sites that has been relatively usable by advanced users, people who know how to get around and how to beat the system, especially for buying it. You know, it never was terribly difficult. Selling a little more so as far as the way that some of the forms are laid out on the selling pages and things like that. So they've improved some of that by adding some heading navigation and adding perhaps some more label graphics, things like that, but also giving directions of how to get around the places that are a little bit troublesome. The thing that does impress me with eBay is they do have people on staff now that are dedicated to accessibility. I have talked to at least one of them via email, and they are interested in doing more. eBay has software for bulk listing of auctions. They have mobile platforms and things like that. So hopefully work can be done in those areas, and it sounds like they're very interested in making this happen. The Sendero was the other one.
Okay, the Sendero, yeah. I like that app. I know some folks are upset it's limited. I guess they expected to do what Navigon does, but I mean, it is $4.99, and it works. When I'm outside, it tells me, you know, the address pretty much where I am, tells me my cross street, tells me a nearest point of interest. You can have it tell you 5 points of interest. I wish you could kind of scroll through those because it just reads them off and you're not sure what it's saying and you can't flick through them. But I like it as a first run. What are your thoughts?
It's a good first effort. Considering that Sendero has not or iPhone programmed before, it's a good first effort and a good learning experience for them. Now, as time goes on, we're going to really have to realize, and they're going to have to realize, that they're no longer just creating apps for the blindness GPS market, that as some of these other GPS apps like Navigon and even some of the lower cost or free ones become more accessible, they're competing in the mainstream market now. So they're going to have to price their features and include their features accordingly. I think they really should focus, and if they want to differentiate themselves and be in the mainstream, that they should focus on all the pedestrian stuff. If they can provide a really good pedestrian tool for walking directions, perhaps do voice recognition for addresses, make it so it's possibly hands-free and also, you know, voice activated and of course accessible to the blind, I think you'd grab a decent chunk of mainstream audience or people who are just walking around or on their bikes, things like that. And that might be something they might want to consider. But I mean, there's other apps out there that give similar information, or at least some of that. There's an app called Where the Hell Am I? That's $1 that will at least tell you your address and things like that. So, you know, they're now competing against even simple little apps like that. It's an area I'm glad to see that they're embarking in that area, and they're definitely going to have some work to maintain their edge.
You know what I think in terms of numbers, one of the biggest news stories of September might be the launch of this $39 Samsung Haven.
That's absolutely right. And considering, I don't know how many calls we get as a business saying, hey, I just want a cheap phone. And not everyone wants to buy a screen reader or even an iPhone where you have to outlay $200 plus a data plan. Every accessible phone that includes basically full access these days requires either a data plan or a purchase of an unlocked phone, with very few exceptions now. So the fact that there is, again, a $40 phone that you can get with not much else commitment other than a voice plan, you know, at most a few dollars a month for texts or whatever, it's definitely refreshing to see, because not everybody needs or wants all the advanced features of cell phones, and there really should be options. You know, I've always said we need to get to the point where people are not just choosing the iPhone because it's the one that talks. We need to have the same options as everyone else. Say, hey, I want an iPhone, or I want an Android, or I want a dumb phone because that's the best phone for me. And they all work accessibly. And once we get to that point, we'll be a lot better off.
Talks releasing a version for Windows Mobile. Is it too little, too late?
Yeah, absolutely. I think they figured that it probably wasn't that much work for them to expand what they had currently to support a few more phone models, which looked like what they did. They didn't even invest in support for touchscreen phones. So that in itself shows me that they don't really have a lot of development or R&D behind creating a full-featured interface. And why would you, especially if Microsoft is not committing to accessibility in Windows Phone 7? If I were in their position, I wouldn't do any more than I had to either.
Would it be wiser to look into doing something for Android, as Code Factory is doing?
I'm sure they are. The only reason I think they even did that is it probably wasn't much work. They already had support for the Verizon non-touchscreen phones. They probably just had to test a few more phones, fix a few bugs here and there, and go. The Braille Wizard.
Yeah, what do you know about it? I really haven't looked at the blog.
As much as you. I mean, the developer of Spiel, he's behind it, and Dean's behind it. Looking at the initial list of features, if they price it right, and by right I mean no more than 25 and ideally less than $2,000 for a 20 cell, you know, you might have some people who like having the Braille keyboard and like having the Braille display. Think about that, considering, you know, if it's also running Android, you have to severely undercut what's there now, and that might be, you know, where the future of note takers is going.
Now, what is this event, the Midwest event going on in Madison, Wisconsin? It sounds interesting. If there's 150 different things going on in this 3-day period, what's going on there October 22nd to the 24th?
Vision Midwest, what he's billing it like is basically it's a conference for everyone. It's everything from their sessions on technology to sessions on parenting or teaching. And then there's a session on homebrewing and I believe a winemaker coming in from Europe. You have your pick of different sessions you can go to. There's an exhibit hall. There's a bowling tournament. There's a 15K run, an accessible tour of a museum. I'd say it's more of a retreat than a conference. So if you take ACB or NFB and remove the politics, this might be what you have. You know, it'll be interesting to see how many people actually show up to this thing and whether it can sustain itself. It really is a cool idea. We'll check it out. We'll definitely report back and see how it goes.
I think the biggest problem that we're having right now in scanning, getting OCR and color identification things with the iPhone is the lighting. Most people don't have the proper lighting. And when I was visiting someone, it dawned on me, I had my Colorina with me, that I used it to actually find the light and then line up the phone in front of the light. And it greatly improved my results.
The flash in the iPhone and, you know, the camera in general, while it's greatly improved over the past version, it still is not as good as the camera on the Nokia N86, especially with the flash that's in there. And that was always one of the big selling points of the Reader, was that it was able to do at least a decent job, even in poor lighting. So that's definitely a hurdle that they're going to have to overcome. One of the things that you've been able to do with the Nokias is take your pick and tailor your software for the best camera phones out there. While iPhone is the most accessible right now, maybe as Android gets more accessible, maybe, you know, the Reader or software like that would actually make it there first before the iPhone, depending on how the cameras go. Other people get the iPhones. I just bought a Droid this week that I started playing with.
Oh, really? How's that going?
It's going. Just like Ranger said before, and other people too that you were talking to, it's come a long way in just the last month.
Patrick and Leslie, just wanted to plug our accessibility conference, D.C. Public Library, Martin Luther King Branch in Washington, D.C., October 9th, 9:30 to 5:30. I assume that would be Eastern.
Those are always a lot of fun to go to. I know you and I went to one last week, and that was packed.
Thank you for joining us. And join us next week, October 7th. We are going to talk about blind parenting. Folks, or maybe one of the spouses was sighted, or situations where both parents were blind and had to deal with discrimination, or going in and making sure that the school systems gave their children equal access, or just doing things like, you know, Little League. I mean, there's all kinds of things, that issues you might not even think of. And Ricky Inger will be joining me on that, and we'll get a few other folks that could talk about overcoming discrimination and advocacy. For those who are members of SAMNet, you can go to the tech room and we'll talk afterward about the stories and things that we've covered this evening.
This concludes another Serotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Serotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. Until we meet again, stay connected and stay directed.